intercepted by Notre Dame.
For Notre Dame football fans, there's no sweeter sound than the words,
touchdown Notre Dame,
or Irish win.
He's in for touchdown. The Irish have come from behind.
As a fan of the Fighting Irish, you know that Saturdays in the fall are not just game days. They are unforgettable experiences. Welcome to a fan's perspective on Fighting Irish football. This is Dome and Domer. Here are your hosts, Mike Brammer and Ed Jordanic.
Hello, Irish fans, and welcome to another edition of Dome and Domer. My name is Mike Brammer. Joining me, Ed Jordanic. And Ed, well, first off, let me clarify one point, because I think some of the listeners were a little miffed at the, at least the headline of last Thursday's show. And I'm speaking for Mike Coffey. I think the point was this. It wasn't a must-win for Kelly in his career at Notre Dame. The point was it was a must-win for this season and this football team for the 2010 momentum that they needed. That was the gist of the must-win comment, certainly, and I'm sure that Coffey would agree. Brian Kelly needed this win in a big way for this football team for this year. He didn't need it for his career, his standing with Notre Dame. And quite honestly, I don't know, my guess is you'd probably agree with this. Brian Kelly could go 500 this year. He could go 500 next year. And he could go 500 in his third year, and they still would not fire him. There's been way too much turmoil at Notre Dame with the head football coaching position, and I just don't think they're in any way, shape, or form going to make any kind of a change based on the head coaching position unless it's an absolute disaster.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree with that. Like I said, I think short of some kind of a scandal or recruiting violation that's, you know, and we don't expect anything like that. But, I'm not even so sure it was a must-win for this season, but that's, you know, that's debatable. I think that, again, we always equate this to, I look at it as rebuilding. I look at it as relearning. He might not want to call it that, but I'm just looking for style of play, effort, fundamentals, kind of a renewed kind of commitment, renewed kind of passion. And sometimes, you know, the breaks go your way. Sometimes they don't. Michigan State, they didn't. Pittsburgh did not play a very good football game Saturday. We obviously had chances to make some plays that would have put the game out of reach. So I guess I'm kind of looking at quality of play and some things. Because, of course, our frame of reference is always going to be the Holtz era. In his first year,
right,
the results, exactly, the bottom line results, were not very good on paper.
No,
Brian Kelly's going to have a better record at the end of his first year than Lou Holtz had at the end of his first year.
He will, and for a couple of reasons. One, obviously the talent level is a little better than what it was when Holtz walked in.
I don't know about that. Jerry Faust did not have any trouble recruiting players. At least, it wasn't the science that it is now. But
yeah, I would
of,
agree.
You know, I mean, it, they
there's some
they,
truth to that. Yeah, I would agree. There's some truth to that. I think the problem is that with everybody we had coming back, I mean, expectations were high, and maybe more so, and I think we found this out yesterday, maybe more so the expectations were higher than they should have been for Dane Crist. And I think clearly one thing I'm interesting to get your take on this, but if there's one thing I learned from yesterday's game, Dane Crist is not there yet. He's not that comfortable with the offense yet. And if there's any indication of that, look at the delay a game call on him there down inside the red zone. That's just something that should never happen. And when a quarterback is in complete control of the spread offense, and I do think that, you know, this is what we're learning. The spread offense is a great offense if you have the players that can play that offense and if you have a quarterback that's the perfect fit for that offense. And right now, I just don't see it with him. I think part of, we saw last week that Kelly was obviously frustrated. I thought a lot of his frustrations this week were with Dane Crist.
Yeah, I mean, the red zone, our red zone performance still leaves a lot to be desired. That's pretty obvious. He made a great individual play on his touchdown run. That was a good decision, and he's a big, strong guy, so he got away from an attempted kind of arm tackle, upper body tackle. So that was a great play. But I agree with you. I think if there's one thing that was really oversold and overhyped in the lead-up to this season in terms of Brian Kelly and his ability as a coach, as an offensive coordinator, as a developer of players, was this. Well, we could just roll any old quarterback out there and get the job done. At Cincinnati, he had, you know, second, third, fourth, fifth string. I mean, the legend grew. You know, by the time the season started, you kind of had the impression that John Goodman could start at quarterback for us in the spread, and
right,
he'd go
exactly.
9-3. You know,
exactly.
So I think that was just a little bit much. The fact of the matter is that he had implemented the system at Cincinnati for 3 years. He had guys immersed in it for 3 years, those quarterbacks, Pike and Caleros, et cetera, et cetera. So, and maybe the level of competition was a little bit better. And more importantly than that, it's not a solo job. So that quarterback was surrounded by skill position players who had also been immersed in the system for 3 years. So I completely agree with you but I also don't think that Chris's progression has been I don't have any frame of reference, but I don't think it's been particularly slow. I believe what Kelly says when he says he's picking up stuff and he's very coachable. And so, but I think it's more of, you're right, it's an issue of our expectations more than how he's doing.
Exactly. I totally agree. And I think it is our expectations that are higher than what they should be, and more so because of the frustration we've had over the last 20 years. But obviously he showed brilliances of it yesterday. I mean, there were that first half he was on fire, albeit beside the first series of the game. He played about, from that point forward, he played as good as he's played all year long.
And
there's no doubt about it. And he was in control. And he actually even seemed comfortable.
Right. The pace was really good. It was fluid. But
yeah, I mean, and it was fast-paced, almost maybe even arguably too fast-paced. I mean, I really thought they were pushing it a bit.
But let's not also forget something. We could easily right now be talking about his best game to date. He easily could have had another 100 yards passing, another 2 touchdowns.
Right.
Because of plays that were called back, drops, et cetera, et cetera. It could have been his best game to date by a long shot. So that's the kind of stuff that happens, and his statistics look pretty average. I'm not a big statistics guy. He got them across the finish line, but the execution in the red zone, a lot of those things, you're right, they still have a ways to go. But the thing is that it appears to me the team responds to him. He's showing, I think, some better touch on the ball. He made a couple really nice deep throws. And
yeah, he did.
And throw to Rudolph, I think that was, he was throwing to, you know, Kyle Rudolph before the hamstring injury instead of after it. And, you know, like, you know, Pete Sampson in his column today has a great line, and he said it was the pattern was more underrun than it was overthrown. You know, I mean,
right.
Rudolph just
right.
couldn't, is not as is not 100%. So
he's not, and I thought it was pretty obvious on that play, and had he been 100%, that would have been right in the basket.
Yep.
I do think he definitely threw better. I still think that he's just not all the way there yet.
No.
And I do think this is the important thing. They got the win they needed. They got the coach's win I was looking for yesterday, and they got it. And now they have an opportunity to build on this win. And I think the next 3 games are going to be critical for them. I agree with you. There's no gimme. There's no such thing as a gimme in college football anymore. There's way too much parity. You can't just walk onto the field and win it.
Nope.
You have to execute. So,
and certainly this group can't. This group has too much baggage to be able to do that. Yeah.
There's right. And I think that, that they obviously have to execute the next 3 games, but these are clearly 3 games that are potential building blocks for the program, for the team,
definitely,
heading into, you know, what's going to be a great finish to the season with Utah and then Southern Cal.
Right. I think you could even make an argument that says if you really kind of look at it over the long term, Dane Crist's true coming out party, establishment, comfort zone game where you just say, this guy has got it, he's got the spread, he's got it, he feels comfortable. It might be the Michigan game next year or the USC game in the middle of next season. Do you know what I mean? I mean, it could be.
I hope it doesn't take that long.
But I mean, you know, think about it. I mean, a year, I mean, you know, 15 games in the system. I mean, certainly it wasn't like, take any great quarterback. There's very few that were just, I think, obviously, Denard Robinson is an example of somebody who worked hard over an offseason and came back. But he struggled on Saturday against the best defense that he's played this year. So, you know, Montana, Peyton Manning, these guys, I mean, they're in systems for a little while before things really click, and they really feel like they're in control of the game, that they're in control of the action, that they know exactly where things are going. You're right. I hope it comes quicker than that. But I still expect more ups than downs. But it might be the middle of next season before we see a game where it's like, oh my gosh, this guy looks like, take your pick, you know, Tony Pike at the height of his powers, you know, 35 for 42 for 417 yards and four touchdowns or whatever, and not even close to an interception, or you know, you name it, what that looks like, a perfect game. But I think we're going to see one.
I do. I think he's going to get there. He's just—it's real obvious he's not there yet. You can just tell, you know, when they show that close up of him on the sidelines, where Kelly's in his face. I mean, you can just tell the look in his eyes. He's not 100% there.
Yeah, but he has these streaks where he hits 11 in a row.
He does
or seven in a row. You know, right?
No, I know you're right, and he, you know, he clearly had some things go against him.
Yep.
I mean,
yep.
Romine, if he doesn't drop that pass,
yeah,
that's
Ragone,
the first down.
Ragone,
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You know, that would have been huge.
Yeah.
He makes that play, there's momentum, and then all of a sudden things click. He drops the ball, and you're like, oh, my God, here we go again.
And Rudolph in the red zone, too, is about the 5-yard line.
I know, he did.
Right,
he
hands.
Did.
Yeah.
You know, I know that one was a little bit high, but you know what?
No,
you're a player. You got to make that play.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, and I do think that I didn't have a problem with the call on the pick play. I mean, you got to sell that a lot better than what he did.
Yeah, I think you're right.
He kind of ran into it.
Mayock hit that. He made the right observation. You just have to look like you're not even thinking about the guy.
Yeah, you
got to
put your hands up or something like that. Yeah. You can't just run and try and bump him.
Yep.
But I think he did. If he would have made any kind of an effort to sell that, that's a touchdown.
Yeah.
It goes for a touchdown, and then the game changes. Now, I will say this. The one disappointing thing for me, albeit there was a 50-yard field goal, on that fourth down where they went for it and didn't get it, you have got to punch that in and the game is over.
You got to hit him right there.
You punch that in and the game's over, and we didn't do it. And that I think, is the indication of where this football team is at as of right now.
I also thought that we could have – it seemed like we had a promising start in a little bit in terms of the running game, and then we just kind of went away from it, and it was very, very average day on the ground. You know, Sierra Wood had a couple nice little runs. Armando never really got untracked. But that's one of the things that I think we as Notre Dame fans are going to have to learn to live with, that this is not, you know, we are not going to have, you know, a 38-rush, 274-yard.
No, not at all.
It's just not going to happen.
Those days are gone.
And I miss that, to tell you the truth. I really like it if we could have a game here or there where – and what's interesting about it is you see that in – even if the run is working, we go away from it. You know, the spread is a pass-first offense, the pass to set up the run. And you see that because we will reel off three or four plays in a row with an average of 6 or 7 yards, and then we might not run the ball again for 4 or 5 plays.
Right. And that's just the way that it is.
That's
philosophy.
Right. That's the way
That's the way, you know, the 49ers, which, you know, the West Coast offense, which in my mind is a spread offense, I mean, they won a championship that way. They won 4 that way. It's just the way that it's going to be, and you have to be willing to accept that style of football versus the Lou Holtz, I'm going to run it down your throat, and we got enough talent to do that.
And I think, like Mike Mayock said, he made a very good point, the double-edged sword of the spread, when you have a lead or when you're trying to consume clock and you don't go away from the pass, is if you drop it, the clock stops. So it's not like a running play that goes nowhere. The clock still goes. The clock still runs if you're trying to. But if you throw an incomplete pass, I mean, the problem with Ragone dropping the ball was not just that we didn't get a first down because he dropped it, but also the clock stopped. And that gives basically Pittsburgh another 35, 40 seconds. So,
yeah. Yeah, and it is what it is, and that's just, you just assume that plays like that. And it wasn't just one, though. I mean, there were, like you mentioned, the Rudolph drop, that drop. In a spread offense, when you almost got to be 90%. You literally have to be 90% accurate in a spread offense, and it's doable with the right kind of athletes.
Right.
You should be 90%. It just seems like we're not there. We're definitely not there yet with Dane Chris, but even so, with the rest of the team, we're just not all the way there yet.
Yeah. I mean, we should tip.
Maybe it is.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say maybe it is Rudolph. I mean, he clearly isn't 100%.
Right.
I think that's pretty obvious.
I mean, I think yeah, we should probably tip our hat to the defense a little bit. I mean, for the most part,
they did.
They kept the ball bottled up, except for the play that Jim Morris kind of blew. Or I don't know if he blew it. I don't know. It might have been a touchdown, anyways. But he did run up when he never should have. And you know, they have two legitimate, maybe first, second team kind of, you know, third team kind of All American running backs. And you know, they combined for I think 100 yards or less. That's not bad.
Yeah, no, I thought
they didn't.
Those were probably two of the best backfield backs we're going to see the rest of the season.
Right, right. And they didn't. They didn't get any long runs.
The defense definitely played well. More of the bend but don't break mentality. I mean, we clearly were giving their wide receivers a lot of cushion,
and we got some help. I mean, Pittsburgh, you know, totally blew a couple field goals, and
they did. Yeah. I mean, it's unfortunate because it clearly wasn't the win we were hoping for, especially the way things looked through the first half. And you'd love to see a team get in a position where they can put the, especially on that fourth down.
Right.
I mean, I can't understand how you can take over at the opponent's 42 and then kick a 50-yard field goal.
Yeah.
I mean, you just cannot do that. That is not. Yeah. That's not in the cards. That's not acceptable. There's a chance to put that away, and we just didn't do it. And
everything is kind of tempered by the fact that, I mean, Wonstadt is basically this year's Charlie Weiss. He's probably not going to lose his job after this year, but you kind of get the feeling that that's a program that may have peaked last year.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with you. I think that Wonstadt has peaked. I think that they're going to look for an excuse to get him out of there because he just, you know, they've had their opportunities and they just haven't been able to convert.
Well, he's a hometown guy and he's recruited well and he's developed great relationships with a lot of that Western PA high school talent and those coaches and stuff. So that can't be discounted. But, man, some of the stuff, you know, I thought their play calling was just atrocious. And
it was. I mean, you know, he talked about coming out and running the ball in the second half, and then they didn't do it.
They did a couple times.
But then they got away from it, and that's what got him in trouble. I mean, the quarterback is obviously a sophomore. He's young. He made some mistakes. But, man, with those two running backs, I'd almost be, you know, especially in the situation that they were facing, and albeit, you know, it was 6 points.
Right.
I mean, early in the fourth quarter, they had plenty of time.
Yeah. And Notre Dame's defense is not, I mean, if you've watched them, I mean, there is just, you could really make a case that you just run the ball 27 times in a row on them, and sooner or later, you're going to break off a 40-yard touchdown or a 50.
That's right.
You just keep pounding them, and there just isn't the evidence that they're going to be able to contain two really good running backs the whole day. They're just so... and then he calls a timeout before he punts the ball. That
made no sense to me. I don't get it.
It wasn't too good.
And again, that's just, you know, that's it's easy to sit here, you know, 10,000 foot level and view a game and call it as a fan does. But, you know, and he's in the heat of the battle. I mean, there's so many things going on.
Sure.
He obviously needed some momentum. That football team needed a reason to think that they were going to put it away.
Weren't there over 3 minutes left and you're going to possibly go for it when you're still in the game from your own 15? I mean,
yeah,
to me, that's not even a real difficult called.
And he had two timeouts left. Yeah, I don't get.
I know.
I mean, why call a timeout? You just burned one and then go ahead and bunt it.
Right. I'm not a Bears. I'm not a Bears or Dolphins fan, but it for those guys.
And he was frustrating to me.
It was all too familiar, I'm sure, for those fans.
Yeah, way too familiar.
You know, Ruffer and Turk, great games, great job, and I think there's evidence right there of whatever it is, player development. You know, there's a coaching aspect to that too. But Turk was really struggling, and they've obviously spent a lot of time with him, and some of it we've seen on national television in a rather profane way. But that's okay. Look what a great game he had, and those kinds of things. You know, that could mean the rest of the year is he's really a consistent force again. And Ruffer, what can you say about him? I mean, we just haven't had kicking like that in a decade.
No, we haven't. You know, I will say this. I mean, if there was the very first coach's call that I was like, whoa, was when Brian Kelly named Ruffer as the kicker. I mean, if you remember at that point, it's not like Nick Tausch's accuracy level was a question mark.
No.
I mean, he was 13-16. I think Tausch had 14 in a row.
I think so too.
I think he was one of the record
holders
with 14 in a row. So it wasn't like that was, you know, an obvious call. That was a big surprise to some people, including myself, that he went with Ruffer. And sure enough, he was dead right. I mean, there's definitely some kudos to Kelly for that.
I'm really curious to know how the rules work, because that kid deserves a scholarship. I mean,
yeah, and the problem is we're not really in that easy of a position to give it to him.
Well, yeah, but you know, you got to think. I mean, with Roebuck and Spencer Boyd, I guess, yeah, leaving school and
if
stuff,
they don't back, yeah, I agree.
Those are the two guys that have transferred already.
Oh, did they? I didn't know Spencer transferred. Is that he's definitely done?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah,
well, unfortunately for us, the other point to make on this, the comment that I wanted to get into this show, is that a sad day for us, knowing that if any NFL scout watches that game, Floyd will be in the NFL next year. what a couple of ridiculous catches he had.
I know.
Just absolutely ridiculous. And he's just too physical of a body. Holy cow. I will say this, the one passing play I'd like to see us put in, and I'm not sure why we haven't yet, but it's that one-on-one coverage inside the red zone where him as the wideout kind of goes into the receiver and then pushes out towards the cone. That's a touchdown all day long with that kid. And Weiss used to run that all the time. I'm not sure why we have not gone to that yet. But holy cow, is he an unbelievable physical presence.
No, you're right. I mean, if you're a scout and you're like, Jonathan Baldwin, Floyd, I don't think it's very close, actually.
Not even close. Unfortunately for us, not close. But, you know, that's how it is. So let's get what we can out of him this season. And full well knowing that he isn't going to be around. I wouldn't surprise me if Rudolph stays. I do think Rudolph right now is probably looking like a late first round, maybe second round pick. So that being the case, maybe he sticks around and pushes himself up into the middle of the first round next year. Let's hope so. Unfortunately, I think Floyd's going to go, and it would not surprise me at all if that kid's in the top 10. Not at all.
Yeah, he made a couple of them pretty
unbelievable.
Impressive.
Yeah, so, unbelievable. Yeah. Okay, we'll leave it there. You've been listening to Dome and Domer, an online conversation about Notre Dame sports from a fan's perspective. For Ed Jordanic, I'm Mike Brammer. Thanks for listening.